Welcome back, one and all, to another edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. You are at the best seat at the track. Welcome back in. I am your host, Davey Siegel, as always. We got the one, the only Mike Bachman on the show with us today. Excited to chat with him, talk a little bit Kansas, talk a little bit about the All-Star race, plus Nicky Bobby is on with us. Nick Sanchez, winner at Kansas in the ARCA Menards Series. We chat about his season to date and whether or not he thinks he can win this championship. Lots of stuff to do, little time to do it, so let's get this episode started.
Boogity, boogity, boogity! Let's go racing, boys!
Green flag is out on the podcast this week. Mike, welcome to the show. Get ready to rip your rookie stripe off at the end of this thing. I know you've been on Stock Car Scoop, but this is a bit different. You got to stick around a little bit longer than 5 to 7 minutes, so I hope that you're ready.
Oh, man. After that introduction, I am set, man. So I appreciate you having me on and excited to break down Kansas here with you.
Absolutely. Let's dive right into it. I think that was a pretty fun race. I think that Kansas, honestly, may get a bit of a bad rap, whether it's the attendance numbers and the people that do or don't show up, or people lump it into another cookie-cutter mile-and-a-half track. For the last couple years, after this repave and the asphalt seems to have aged pretty well, I'd say Kansas Speedway is up there in terms of the best mile-and-a-half tracks that we have, and I think that Sunday was evidence of that. It was a pretty solid race, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, Davey. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I talked about this a little bit on Stock Car Scoop, but, you know, Kansas, one of those mile-and-a-halves with two dates on the schedule, and certainly the first was no shortage of excitement. I mean, the racing all around, there was action in multiple parts of the track, multiple areas of the race. And, you know, we saw a magnificent performance from Kurt Busch. I mean, what a day for the former champion and what a day for Toyota in 23-11. Truly a banner day for that entire team and that entire organization, being able to place every car in the top 10. And for Kurt Busch, this is why 23-11 brought him on, right? What he does to elevate teams. We saw this at Ganassi, and we're seeing it now just 13 races into the 2022 season. On a day where so many drivers had a number of different issues, Kurt Busch seemed to have put together a flawless race, was able to get around Kyle Larson late in stage three and take the checkered flag home for his first win of 2022. Really exciting stuff for the 43-year-old.
Kurt Busch is a winner. We have known that, and we expected him to win at 23-11. At least I did. I don't know if we expected to see it at a mile and a half track. I don't know what we were expecting. I just wasn't really expecting it to come this soon. I guess I shouldn't have been shocked about it. But you're right. Everywhere that he goes, he elevates those programs. Penske, Phoenix Racing, Furniture Row Racing, now 23-11. He did it at Ganassi. He's done it everywhere he's been. Won the championship, obviously, in 2004 with Roush Racing. The man has been racing in the Cup Series almost as long as we have been alive. And he's won every step of the way, almost every single year. I believe he's won in 19 seasons, and there's only been 2 years where he hasn't won a race, and that was when he was going through some of his off-track struggles, obviously. So on track, we've known that Kurt Busch is a winner, and that wasn't going to change when he got to 23-11. So let's dive into that first, because I want to touch on something else in a bit. Denny Hamlin's emotion after the race. We saw that, Mike. I think that says a lot about him, considering where his, you know, priorities lie at the moment. I don't know if his priority number one is driving the 11 car, to be honest. And I have no authority to say that, but just looking from the outside, seeing the emotion that he had after Kurt won that race and saying that that win was more emotional and meant more than maybe any other win that he has had personally, I think that speaks volumes. But also from Kurt, you know, we understand that Kurt Busch is in the twilight of his career. We don't know how much time he has left. I don't know if he knows how much time he has left. But him winning this race, and Dale Jarrett said it on the NASCAR and NBC podcast, which that's pretty high praise, he thinks this win is bigger than his Daytona 500 win. He thinks this win is bigger than his championship back in 04 because of how he has built this team up, this new team within the greater organization of 23-11. This is a very, very big win for him personally, but also organizationally for multiple reasons. I just think that there's a lot to unpack with the victory from a personal and professional standpoint with Kurt Busch. Were you surprised that it happened when it did, or were you expecting it to happen in relatively short order?
Well, I certainly was expecting Kurt Busch to win at some point this year, but again, to happen right here, right now, especially after the couple weeks that he has had, is really, really impressive, and certainly wasn't expecting it at a track like Kansas or a mile and a half, you know, with that said. But to your point, Denny Hamlin's emotion after this race is just the picture perfect image that we all have here. And, you know, over these past couple of years, I mean, we have started to see that performance in the 11 car maybe take a little bit of a dive. Obviously, Hamlin is still extremely consistent. And, you know, we obviously are in no place to, you know, discuss where his mind is truly at. But it really speaks volumes to the effort that he has put in trying to get 2311 Racing off the ground. Obviously, last year was a rough start, a rough entry into the Cup Series. They did get that Bubba Wallace win. But already this year, we have seen this organization. I mean, even Bubba, probably the fastest car we have seen him drive this past weekend at Kansas, you know. But pit road problems, was able to, you know, rebound on multiple different occasions still to get a top 10 finish. But, you know, that 23 car is really starting to show speed. And I think Kurt Busch is, you know, the key factor of that, just being the teammate for Bubba Wallace and helping elevate him, you know, as a driver as well. But just to go back to Denny Hamlin for a second, I mean, this entire team and what they've been able to put together shortly here in 2022 is really incredible. And we don't really know what the future holds for Kurt Busch here. The scene at the end at Kansas, you know, getting the greets from Hamlin, from guys like Kyle Busch, obviously his brother, Christopher Bell, just everybody in that Toyota camp. I mean, it really looked as though, could we maybe foreshadowing the end of Kurt Busch's career? Mm-hmm. Or is this just the beginning of something truly special at an organization with so much hype, with so much to be talked about behind it? Really just an incredible story, and for Kurt Busch to get it done in the way he did was really magnificent.
Kurt Busch, first ballot Hall of Famer?
I would have to say so. Former champion. I mean, I kind of look at it, if Matt Kenseth was able to get in as a first ballot, I mean, I got to throw Kurt Busch in there, because there are not – drivers don't do what he does, and it might not get the recognition that it deserves in terms of what he's able to do with teams, but – drivers just don't bounce around and do that. But that's why Kurt Busch every year during silly season is at the top of everybody's list, because he carries that champion moniker.
Yeah.
It may have been back in 2004, but Kurt Busch demands that respect, and he commands that respect. And we saw it on display after this win at Kansas.
I agree with you. He's got some of the best car control that we've seen. We saw that as evident by his battle with Kyle Larson there at Kansas throughout the entirety of the second half of the race. I think if you want to go through the Cup Series drivers and say who's the most quote-unquote talented right now, I'm not going to put Kurt Busch P1, but he's probably going to be in my top five, even though he's in his mid-40s. Just because he doesn't have as much career ahead of him as some other guys doesn't mean that he's not as good. If anything, I think that probably makes him a little bit better and more valuable. And I think Denny realizes that. Bob Pockers asked him after the race, you know, running the Jordan brand car, that's the first time that Jumpman has been on a car, which was sick to see, by the way. I know you agree with that. But he asked him, you know, was there any hesitation putting an older veteran on the car who maybe won't appeal to people that wear Jordan brand clothing and shoes all the time? Maybe put Bubba on there instead of Kurt. And Denny said no, because he wins. I don't think there's much to argue there. He wins almost everywhere he goes, even at frickin' Phoenix Racing. With James Finch, I don't know if you remember back in the day, but I believe it was Sonoma. He was about to take that 51 car to victory lane before, I think it was a transmission issue that kind of bit them. Even Furniture Row Racing, before they became what they were at the end, which is a championship organization, he was running really strong and was a dominant car at the Coke 600 for that team before some gremlins hindered their advancement there. So even at other smaller teams that he's kind of built up as he was trying to build himself back up after his dismissal from Penske and some off-track issues, Kurt is just a racer. He's just a winner. And oh, by the way, the dude literally on a whim just went to the Indianapolis 500 and almost freaking won the damn thing. Like, I don't think he gets enough respect from us in the media and also fans at large. Like, when he wins, people realize that and they remember, oh yeah, Kurt Busch is really good. But I think when people are talking about the current talent in the Cup Series, you know, they look at some veterans like Harvick, Keselowski, Kyle Busch, Hamlin, Logano, people like that. I don't know if they think about Kurt Busch in that same sentence or up there, but I'm guilty of it. You are too. We should, because I think he is a first ballot Hall of Famer, a Daytona 500 win, a championship, albeit, again, he has not had the longevity and the sustained success as some other people have. There's been some extenuating circumstances that went along with that, a lot of those self-inflicted, I'll grant you that. But to say that Kurt Busch is not a Hall of Famer, which I have not heard, but, you know, I think he's first ballot slam dunk, no question about it.
Absolutely. His career speaks for itself, and, you know, just what he's been able to do team by team for the amount of teams he's been able to do on a consistent basis is truly remarkable. But you mentioned these guys like Harvick, like Keselowski. I mean, they're not winning. They're not winning, and it's been a big problem. I mean, Harvick, you know, now almost 2 years on a winless streak, and Stuart Haas Racing, you know, still trying to find speed in those Ford Mustangs. And Keselowski, you know, obviously now in a co-owner role with Roush and really trying to build that program back to maybe where it once was when Kurt Busch was driving for it in the mid-2000s. You know, but at the end of the day, Kurt Busch does demand that respect. Absolutely surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, in my opinion, to agree with you there, Davey. And just, an incredible scene here at Kansas for a driver that really deserves it for his performance on the track. And obviously, you know, to be able to rebound from 10 years ago from where he was at Phoenix Racing, unsure if he even had a future in Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, whether Cup maybe, but just in NASCAR in general, for what he was going through, to be able to rebound and still drive the wheels off of these cars on a week-to-week basis is really something to be said. And we still get moments like this for fans like us that have been watching for that amount of time to be able to see Kurt Busch on these many different levels. To see him still performing at the highest level, in the highest level, is truly amazing.
Last thing we'll touch on with Kansas has been a Toyota-heavy, 2311-heavy opening segment, but they deserve to get talked about because they put all six of their cars inside the top 10. And I'll tell you, Bubba Wallace, if it wasn't for some pit road issues that his team had that he called him out for, rightfully so, he could have been battling up there with his teammate Kurt Busch for that win. I think he had top five speed at worst, maybe top two or three on raw speed. He came from the back, I think, two or three times after penalties and still was able to rebound for a top 10 finish. So even though, you know, they started off the season with the bang, runner-up at Daytona with the 500, had a bit of a rough stretch, to put it lightly, and had been regularly outperformed by his teammate, Kurt Busch, and that continues with the win. But this is a bright spot for Toyota organizationally. This is a bright spot for 2311 as a team as well, because those six cars and those two cars with 2311, they had a lot of speed, which we have not been able to say so far this season. And I get it. Mile and a half, that may not be indicative of short tracks. That not may be indicative of road courses. But this is a positive sign of, hopefully for them, things to come from Kurt's side and from Bubba's side, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, this was a banner day for Toyota, and really the first time this year we were able to see all of those cars and drivers flex their muscles. You know, and to your point, Davey, we talk about these mile and a halfs, right? But look, this next-gen car has elevated the racing at mile and a halfs. We saw it at Las Vegas. We saw it at Kansas. I mean, at the end of the day, this is the bread and butter of NASCAR, and at this moment in time, it really looks like that this is going to be the future, because look at the racing. I mean, the racing was absolutely incredible. So in that sense, you know, it has certainly elevated that, and Toyota taking full advantage. So if they're able to just take what they did this week, you know, build on it for those mile and a half in the future, you know, obviously Kansas playing a pivotal role in the playoffs. So it's a great first test for them. You know, we expect that we're going to have a number of Toyotas in the playoffs, already have three of them with the Busch brothers and Denny Hamlin. But we expect Truex to get there. And look, I think a lot of us expect Christopher Bell to break through at some point this year as well. And Bubba Wallace still capable of winning a race with a car like he had today or at Kansas. You know, just needs to clean it up on pit road. But for Toyota, a massive bang out in the Midwest. And hopefully it's a sign for things to come in the organization, because they've had speed, just haven't had the finishes to really show for it.
I lied. Last thing on Kansas. You think we'll get to 16 or 17 winners? I'm still saying no.
You're still saying no? Dude, I feel like if it's any year, this is the year, because we still
Everyone says that every year.
Yeah, well, yes, but I think there's a lot more validity this time, because there's so many drivers that we expect to get to victory lane. Martin Truex Jr., mm-hmm. Ryan Blaney. You know, I mentioned Christopher Bell. I still think Kevin Harvick could break through and get a win this
Tyler
year.
Tyler Reddick, Daniel Suarez,
Sebo. Tyler Reddick, Suarez, exactly. So what's that? 5, 6, 7 more
Look,
drivers
I
there?
I know. I'm playing with you. I still don't think it's going to happen, but I do, and I hate saying, like, oh, for the end of years it's going to happen, it could be this year, because we say that all the time, but it's true. I mean, it's true, right? Like,
yeah.
I still think, though, like, Larson's going to win more. Byron's going to win more. Chase is going to win more. Both, like, all these guys that have won already, Kyle Busch, he's going to win again. I just don't see, what is it, 6 or 7 more winners that we need to get past that threshold. I don't see it happening. But I've been wrong before, and I'd love to be wrong again, because that would be a hell of a storyline.
No, absolutely. And that'd be the first time that this playoff system would really deliver in that sense. Yep, but to your point there, Davey, you know, we have not seen the multiple race winners like we have seen in the past couple of years. I mean, Ross Chastain, William Byron are right there at the top with 2. I mean, yep. Byron was close, obviously, last week at Darlington, and you know, without the flat tire, he certainly had a fast car this weekend at Kansas. But we haven't really been able to see much, like, driver-to-driver domination in terms of one guy cleaning up every week, like we saw a Kyle Larson last year or a couple years ago with Harvick and Hamlin.
I think it's coming, though. I do. Like, the summer stretch, it breeds that type of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, exactly. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in this next stretch as we get closer to the playoffs. But again, the pressure's up. And for these guys that haven't won on a week-to-week basis, if other guys like Kurt Busch, like if Tyler Reddick or Daniel Suarez, or let's say both, win before Blaney, before Truex, you know, some of these more veteran drivers, I mean, what's that gonna mean? You know,
it's
going to get crazy for sure. But the parity this season has been incredible, and it's better content for us to talk about on a week to week basis. So we're certainly not complaining with how things are shaping out.
Oh yes, for sure. There. All right, Mike, stick around. We're going to get a quick chat in with Nikki Bobby and come back, and we'll talk about the All-Star race. So stick around. You're listening to the Front Stretch Pod. Let's throw it over to our chat with Rev Racing's Nick Sanchez. He won this past weekend at Kansas Speedway. Second win already this season for Rev Racing. How did that feel? How's his relationship with his teammate Rajah Carruth, DC born and bred? That's my boy right there. And you guys may have seen Billy Venturini's comments about Drew Dollar. That does not affect Nick Sanchez, but I want to get his thoughts on those as well. The current landscape and competition in the Arca Menards series is a bit questionable. I want to get his candid thoughts on that as well. Plus, he's currently tied for the points lead with his teammate, Rajah Carruth. How realistic is it to win this championship while also getting experience in the NASCAR Xfinity Series with BJ McLeod Motorsports? The answer to all those questions and more coming up right here. Here's my chat with Nick Sanchez. Pleasure to welcome onto the show this week a good friend and a wonderful character in the world of NASCAR. It's not Ricky Bobby. It's Nikki Bobby. How we doing, my friend? I know you're doing well coming off that Kansas victory.
I'm doing great. You know, just chilling over here.
Chilling like a villain. And you look very professional with your Chevrolet patch on your pullover. You're a company man now. Look at you go.
Bow tie brigade. We love it. We love it.
You got any other cool swag from Rev or Chevy now that you're big time?
Yeah, they're actually sending me a bunch of vintage tees, so that's pretty cool. I'm a big Chevy guy, so now I get to wear more of the lifestyle stuff, so looking forward to that.
Is your everyday car a Chevy? The answer is supposed to be yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm serious. It is.
What do you drive?
I actually drive one of my dad's old Vets. You know, obviously, so before this all happened, I didn't have a Chevy. So I was like, you know, I should probably, you know, when I show up to the shop, I should probably be in a Chevy. So it's the car. That's the car.
You have the nicest car in the parking lot. I feel like an old Vet has to take the cake.
They have some new Tahoes and Silverados out here. So it's hard to compete with that.
Yours is better.
It's classic, though. We like it.
Yeah, it is. Well, let's talk about Kansas this past weekend, my friend. How did that one feel? Second win of the season and the first time you've won at the same track twice. Kansas is good to you.
Yeah, Kansas is definitely good to me. You know, me and my team have had good success there. Obviously, I feel like Kansas is really comparable to other mile and a halfs like Michigan and whatnot. And we've had really good speed there. So it all kind of meshes together. But yeah, a good weekend for us. And, you know, we ended up on top.
Did you expect to have that type of race winning speed going into Kansas? I mean, knowing that you had it last year, I assume that you knew you were going to be good. But as the race kind of developed, did you see yourself contending for the win like you did?
Yeah, obviously it's hard to say that, with the 18 and the 20, wrecking out there and I guess the first half. But we did have speed to contend with them. We were a little bit off from as far as our rear grip went, and, you know, we really struggled in the beginning stages of the race with that. But I feel like the track kind of changed just enough at the end and the groove kind of went up. It did some things with my car, that made it a lot more bearable. But still, me and my team definitely would have preferred to have a little bit more speed in the car to really show our hand from the beginning.
Your teammate Raja, my DC brother, he finished right behind you in second. You guys are now tied for the points lead, which is pretty cool. I know that at Rev, you know, your guys' relationships are always pretty close-knit. You're doing a lot of the same things. You're running in the same circles, obviously. It is rare, though, that you see two Rev Racing drivers running consistently this well up front week after week. I assume your relationship has not soured yet into rivals on track, and you guys are pretty close-knit at the shop and at the racetrack too.
Yeah, you know, me and Raja, you know, we're very respectful on the track and race as hard as anyone else, if not harder, since we're teammates. But, you know, me and him, right, we both have a really good relationship, and it's fun. You know, like I said, last thing we want to do, and, you know, obviously the team's going to hate us if we do it, wreck both of our race cars fighting for a win. So yeah. We race hard on the track, respectful, and we're friends off it.
That battle you had with him at Phoenix, I was holding my breath. I was like, yeah. Oh, be careful.
Yeah, I mean, hey, we're racing hard out there, and I feel like me and him are probably one of the most aggressive people, or if not the two most aggressive people in the series. So we battle hard.
So I know you're big time, but you got to get on his level because he's on billboards around Charlotte now. So you got to get.
I know. Yeah, I'm still not on a billboard. I don't know if I ever will be on a billboard. So yeah, he's definitely big time.
So you mentioned racing the 18 and the 20 at Kansas. It's kind of the elephant in the room, but we got to address it, right? You heard Billy Venturini's comments about Drew Dollar. I know you've raced around Drew. You've raced with Drew for a little bit now. What did you make of those comments when you got out of the race car, you hopped on social media and you saw that? You're like, oh, wow, he actually really said that.
Yeah, I feel like it's just like a driver. I mean, he's a team owner and heat of the moment thing. I mean, obviously they have some history that I don't know about, but yeah, it's just hard racing. You know, no matter how it happened, you never like to see one of your cars get wrecked out. And I'm sure Drew felt the same way when his race got ended. So it's just heat in the moment and it's just emotion.
How about the current competition in the Arca Menards series? There's a lot of chatter about the car counts being down, the competition specifically not being as stout as it once was. I think those are all truthful, but at the same time, you're still probably learning every single week, and the competition that you're competing against and every single lap that you have, seat time is really, really valuable. What do you make of the current landscape of the series right now?
Yeah, obviously, you know, you still have the same competition. You know, I still have Heim and, you know, the GMS cars, and, you know, obviously you have the Venturini cars that are really good competition. And I feel like the top five or so, it really hasn't changed much. Obviously with Ty going next, it has a little bit, with him not being there, but obviously ARCA doesn't have the depth of the Xfinity series. When I go race in the Xfinity series, I'm fighting for my life for 20th to 25th, and you're not going to get that in ARCA. And that's just, you know, the nature of the game. You know, obviously ARCA is a lower series, and, you know, there's probably not as much money involved as there is in Xfinity. But, you know, that's why I'm doing Xfinity on that, to get that experience. But ARCA still provides really a good platform for me and my team to learn and keep making improvements.
So let's talk about Xfinity. You're obviously racing on a limited schedule this year for BJ McLeod Motorsports. I know you just added a handful more races this year, which I'm sure you're really, really excited about. The thing that stands out to me is you're racing at your home track, Homestead Miami Speedway. That's going to be a sight to see. I think like half the grandstands, it's just going to be your friends and family just cheering you on.
You're probably right on that. Yeah. I mean, the amount of people that are going to be there that have never been to a NASCAR race, that either friends or family of mine, is going to be crazy. And everyone's looking forward to it. besides the track, I feel, besides the fact that it's, you know, in my eyes, one of the best tracks for racing and whatnot, you know, the vibe of Miami, I think everyone kind of realized it with Formula One Miami going there and, you know, that whole scene. I'm hoping it's going to be as big as that. I don't know. But I feel like Miami is one of those up and coming cities that, you know, it's just, it's really hard not to have a good time there.
Yeah. What did you make of F1 in Miami? Because I know that is your home. And to see all the people that descended from the racing world and just taking over the city, taking over Hard Rock Stadium, that must have been a sight to see for you.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, growing up, like, nobody that I was friends with really watched NASCAR or even F1. If they watched one or the other, it was probably NASCAR. And nobody in the city knew about racing, at least in my eyes. Like, when I told them I raced go-karts and this is like the feeder series, they thought I raced the K1. So they really had no idea what was going to go on in racing or what was going on in racing. So to see, like, the city embrace, like, F1, you know, if some of them were there or watched it because they saw Drive to Survive, cool, but still they're getting into racing, I guess. So that's really cool, and I think it will bleed over to the NASCAR weekend in October.
Yeah, I hope you're right. All right, on Team BJ McLeod, right, how is it having him and his wife Jessica as a boss? Because you look at BJ on the surface and you say, this guy is going to kill me, and then you talk to him for 5 seconds and you realize he's the coolest, kindest, loving dude ever in the garage, right? I feel like that's a stark dichotomy, but having somebody like him in your corner who you can lean on for advice that has the respect of everybody in the garage, from Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick all the way down to Matt Mills and Stephen Parsons, right? It's cool to have a guy like that in your corner and be your boss.
Yeah, like you said, not a single person in the garage has anything bad to say about him. You know, he is truly a stand-up guy. And it's cool getting a drive for someone that races on Sundays, right? You know, like, I've yet to drive for someone that drives themselves. You know what I'm saying? So to have someone to lean on, you know, he obviously has a lot of experience, and he's one of the guys that could take a car that's maybe should run 25th and run 20th of it. And I lean on him a lot for things like that. And, you know, he's obviously given me a great opportunity. And, you know, I'm really, there probably wouldn't be a better person to work with, at least getting my feet wet in the series.
So you said, you know, racing your butt off for 20th or 25th place. That's a bit of a change from contending for race wins every week in K&N, now in ARCA, and winning on a regular basis. Is it hard to adjust from car to car, from series to series, or has it been pretty seamless?
Honestly, it's kind of, you know, I guess you could say Phoenix, it was an adjustment, but not like a hard adjustment, just knowing what I had. But I've been telling people, like, it's a lot more forgiving to race in the Xfinity car just because of, like, the package and the lower downforce. You're not so reliant on that air. And I feel like you could race harder, and I love racing hard. And I like the different variables, the longer races, the live pit stops, and even the choose rule stuff that you can't, that you don't have an ARCA. So you don't, I mean, you know, if you're second, you're going to line up on the outside. There's not a chance. You're going to be on the inside. So stuff like that I enjoy getting to pick and learn. I'm loving it.
How about Jessica? We talked with her on the podcast earlier this year, and she runs a lot of the things over at Live Fast Motorsports and Team BJ McLeod as well. She may not be one of the more foremost public facing figures, but she has her fingerprints on everything going on there.
Yeah, a lot more than I initially thought. Like, you know, some of the times if I have a question for BJ or whatnot, he's like, oh, I got to talk to Jessica. I'm like, oh, so she's definitely a decision maker over there. And she, like, said, she runs a lot of the business side of things. And it's cool to see that she's so involved in it. And she's a big player.
In terms of the Xfinity car, do you have realistic goals or expectations when you get out there? Is it to run top 20? Is it to complete all the laps? Do you have any specific goals that you're trying to set when you get in that Xfinity car?
Obviously, the biggest thing, and I feel like everyone that I've talked to could agree on this, you know, complete all the laps, because I am there to get seat time. You know, don't make any enemies, especially in your second race. But other than that, you know, the Xfinity series is, there's so much depth that you really don't know where you're going to run week to week. You've seen BJ's cars hit it on the money some weeks, and then they've been off a little some other weeks. And it's not just his cars, it's everyone's. So Charlotte will be, it's definitely one of the harder races, but, you know, we'll just have to go and see. Me, I'll drive where the car allows me to, but, you know, obviously I feel like top 15, that would be definitely amazing. But, you know, just run the mix. That's all I want.
You're definitely in the mix when it comes to ARCA. Again, tied with the point standings right now with your teammate Raja. It's legitimate. Like, you are a legitimate championship threat or favorite right now at this juncture in the season. Have you allowed yourself to think about that, the fact that you are a legitimate championship threat? And do you think that you have a realistic shot at getting that championship this year?
Yeah, honestly, you know, I always tell my parents this, like, and they hate me for saying this. I'm like, I'm not really worried in the championship. I'm worried in a base-to-base race. You know, my goal is to try to contend for a win in every race. And obviously, one thing will lead to another. And that's what I tell them and everyone. You know, obviously, we still are very early in the season. But, you know, I just try to show up to every race, do the best I can, and be smart about it. And, you know, if I have a second-place car, I'm going to finish second. I'm not going to wreck myself going for the lead. So that's my goal.
All right. Xfinity race this upcoming weekend at Charlotte. Where can we expect to see you? Who's on the car? And what do you think you can expect?
Hopefully I'll be able to announce that in the coming days, but I will be driving the 99, so not the 5. So it'll be a little bit of a change to the naked eye, I guess, when you see the 99. But, I mean, I don't, like I said, I really don't have any expectations on where I'm going to run. Just got to go out there and hold it to the floor, I guess.
Hold a pretty wheel, my friend. You have your grandma's brisket lately at all?
Actually, yes, about 3 weeks ago. So maybe I need to get some of that before Charlotte.
Hey, you need that.
If you're
going to
be there,
you know,
I might bring you some.
Man, I'm not going to be there. I wish I was, though. You bet. Next time I'm at the racetrack and I know you're going to be there, I may have to put in a request.
I'll bring a cooler full of it.
Okay, good. I'm gonna hold you to that. You know that.
I know you will. I gotta be ready for it.
I appreciate your time, Nicky Bobby. Congrats on the win at Kansas. Good luck the rest of the way in the Xfinity car and in ARCA. We will be watching. We'll be cheering you on, my friend. Shalom.
Thank you.
Checkered Flag is out on the podcast this week. Want to give a big thank you to not only Nicky Bobby, my friend, shalom, and Christy Gormal of Rev Racing as well for helping coordinate that conversation. Always great to catch up with Nicky Bobby. It's rare that we have an ARCA Menards series guest on the show, but I think that it was warranted with Nicky Bobby because good buddy of mine dating back to the K&N days, and glad to see him having some success now on the bigger level of stock car racing. All right, Mike Bachman, let's chat about the All-Star Race at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. Oh, okay.
Take a deep breath, man.
Yeah, I need it. You guys know my thoughts on Texas. I love the fine folks over there, the racetrack. I'm sure that you guys do a great job. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I'm sorry to say, your racetrack sucks. It just does. I don't even know if the All-Star Race is worthy of existing anymore. Frankly, I don't think that it should. I hope that this weekend can change my mind, and I hope that I'll be able to understand the format one of these days, but I don't this year. I don't know. What do you think about the All-Star Race, Mike? Do you think it still has a place on the Cup Series schedule?
I think that there are ways you can keep it. Now, that's extremely vague, right? But I do think that there are ways that the All-Star, you could still have the All-Star Race as a big event. I just think that it's lost its mojo over these past couple of years, five,
gotta
10
call years. Austin Powers, get that mojo back.
Yes. Well, yes, absolutely. But, you know, we look back to, you know, NASCAR's glory days in the mid 2000s. And when the All-Star Race was really, really exciting, you know, the whole thing, the $1 million prize, right? I mean, we're in an era now where, I mean, again, I'm not one to be very in fine tune with a lot of the financials that go around in NASCAR, but $1 million in today's day and age doesn't seem to carry the significance as maybe it once did, you know, years ago.
Sure.
But with that said, I think that with the crazy format that we're running this year, I mean, I'm with you. I'm still trying to get myself to understand exactly what's going to happen. I don't think it's that crazy.
I just think that it's hard to follow.
So,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's
like there's
so
too
many
much happening.
Yeah, there's so many numbers. There's so many explanations. So it, you know, when it's broken down, it probably is like, oh, well, that actually makes a lot of sense. But yeah, it's just it's a lot of what you're looking at, and it's just like, oh, we're doing this again. Oh, we're running it at Texas again, which obviously, to your point, has not been the best track to put on great racing. But I say this every year, you know, I applaud NASCAR for thinking out of the box and trying.
Yeah.
To try and salvage, you know, the All-Star race. I'll throw you a quick nugget because I'm curious to see what you think about this. I've had ideas about the All-Star race. And if you want it, well, now hear me out. I mean, I might sound like a complete crazy person, but I'd be curious to hear what you think. If you really want to try and salvage the All-Star race, really bring it back to its glory, then why not make it a true All-Star race? Let's just completely wipe what we have now. You know, I'm talking, take the top 16 drivers in the playoffs the week before the playoff starts. I'm not sure where you would race it at, but let's just call Charlotte just for the sake of argument. And let's run the true All-Star race and put playoff stakes on the line. You know, develop a format however you want to do it, but let's run the 16 drivers in the playoffs. You can even do an elimination format where you go from 12, 16, 12, 8 to 4. And then whoever's there at the end gets an extra 5, 10 playoff points heading in to the postseason, you know, because that could give a guy that's sitting there in 12 to 16 an extra advantage. You know, this playoff system is all about busting brackets. Well, let's bust them even more so, because we are because I mean, come on, we want to make this exciting. We want to give the fans something to think about. And why not up the stakes for drivers rather than just running what I believe a lot of people think is just a filler weekend now with the All-Star race? You know, let's put some stakes on the line and let's let these boys go at it.
Okay. I don't hate it.
Just a little food for thought for you.
I think it's a very slippery slope putting points, moreover playoff points, on the line without your full chartered field eligible to gain those. I don't even know if that's contractually possible in whatever team signed the charter agreement. I like the idea. I like the thinking. But let's say, for example, right, Kevin Harvick is 17th in points right now, and he's not in the All-Star race. That's weird. He's a former All-Star winner. He's a champion. That's weird. Same thing with Keselowski. You know, I don't know if that would necessarily work, but I like the idea, right? I mean, Jeff Gluck had the idea and has of having eliminations during the race. Like, every single lap, the last place driver has to pull onto pit road and drop out, and that's how it works. The way that it is now, it's too convoluted. It's too hard to follow. The All-Star race should be something that's fun, that's jovial, that new fans that may not have a total in-depth view of NASCAR can turn on, they can understand it easily, and then go back to their friends and say, hey, did you watch that All-Star race the other day? That was pretty cool. It was pretty short, got my attention, it was nice. That's not what we have right now. It takes you over 60 seconds to explain what's happening, and still, for people that are in the sport, they don't really understand it. I am willing to bet you good money, that at least half of the drivers in the field have no idea what the format is. None. I bet you they haven't even looked at it, because all they're going to do is just go out there, race, and do whatever their crew chief or their spotter tells them to do. I'd be willing to bet good money on that. And that is why I don't think the All-Star race has a place right now anymore. Maybe down the road, sure. I'll give that to you. And I understand that getting rid of it is kind of impossible, because the TV contract and how that's agreed upon with the charter and the purse money, I get that. But the fact of the matter is this. There's too many races in the Cup Series right now. There's not enough off weekends. The races are too long. And the Clash is essentially a glorified All-Star race. And that had some new life injected to it this year. New location. All the charter teams were there. Superstar appeal, right? That had a lot of juice. That had a lot of mojo. We called Austin Powers. We got our mojo back, right? The All-Star race does not belong at Texas. I don't think that it belongs to stay permanently at Charlotte either. I think if you're going to do something, move it around. Take it to some exotic locations. Go to local short tracks. Go to another stadium race. Do something. Do road courses. Include all three national series. Do a co-event with IMSA. I don't know. I'm speaking out of my butt right now. But that's because I don't think that this event has a place anymore. The money is a cool appeal, but I agree with you. $1 million now is not what it once was. I will gladly take $1 million, and I'm sure a lot of drivers would too. but Mike, I can't get with it. I can't get up for the All-Star race like I once was able to. And I've been feeling this way for the last handful of years. Again, no disrespect to Texas. I love the fine folks over there. The racetrack sucks right now. It just does. And I wish it didn't, but it does. And I hope that I'm wrong and the All-Star race is amazing. I'm going to watch. I'm probably going to enjoy it. But I just can't get up for it. You know what I mean?
No, definitely. And it certainly could be an opportunity, you know, for those new fans to kind of hop in on a weekend to see the best of the best, to see the champions. But like you said, you know, hopefully we'll get a good race this weekend. I certainly will be watching as well. And, you know, it's a conversation that we'll continue to have. But as we sit here right now, you know, we have our thoughts on it. But nonetheless, hopefully this next gen car will bring something new to the table and we'll be able to break it down.
Yeah, I have a little bit of positive optimism because the next-gen car, as you mentioned, Mike, on intermediates, mile and half tracks, has been exquisite. Chef's kiss, right? If the next-gen car can save Texas Motor Speedway, man, that will do wonders. That's going to take a lot, but I will say, I will give credit where credit is due if that happens, and I'm hoping for the best. All right, I'll put you on the spot. Who gets the $1 million?
Who gets the $1 million? I mean, might be a simple pick, but I'm going to take Kyle Larson. I'm going to take Kyle Larson again at Texas. I just think that, you know, this could be the moment where if Larson is able to win the All-Star race, maybe go on an absolute summer tear. But it could be anybody. So I'm taking Larson. I think that he'll be up front.
I'm going to go with Ross Chastain. I think aggressiveness is going to play out.
Yeah, look, man, Ross Chastain, I mean, even this past weekend, he's got to be on your card every single week, no matter where
we
go.
Be. So, you can't ignore him. You can't ignore him. That would be a $1 million melon smash right there. How about that?
Yeah, talk about that one. Better get a catapult of some watermelons there. Just absolutely send it.
They should have like a watermelon injected with like Monopoly money ready to go. So if he wins, he smashes it and then like coins drop out of it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, talk about a scene. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be sick. Well, Mike, thank you for hopping on with me. Rip your proverbial rookie stripe off, my friend. It has been great getting to chat with you here today. There he goes. He rips it off.
There it goes.
Little programming note and update. You guys may have seen on social media, I announced I am taking a full-time job at SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. So unfortunately, my time here at Front Stretch and on the podcast will be coming to an end. So next week, Brian Nolan's going to be hosting. And I will be on with him to chat a little bit about everything that happened at the All-Star race and preview the Coke 600. But just as a programming note moving forward, I will not be the host every single week. You'll hear me one more time, but great guys like Adam, Mike, Brian, and all the names that you're familiar hearing on Front Stretch and reading on Front Stretch, you will hear them and you will see them on your screens, in your ears, and you will read them with your articles as well. So that's just a little programming note and an update. Appreciate all the kind words everybody sent my way on social media. And I've said that all needs to be said. And I've told the Front Stretch staff how much they mean to me. And I meant every word of that. So Mike, it's been great getting to chat with you, my friend. I look forward to seeing what you can do with the company moving forward. And hey, maybe if Texas gets saved by the next gen car, maybe I'll just come back and gloat about that with you. How about that?
Hey, man, that sounds like a plan. But in all seriousness, a big congratulations to you. You know, you've been nothing but gracious for me. And it's been a pleasure being able to work with you. So thank you so much and all the best for you going forward.
Appreciate that, my brother. I really do. All right, guys, if you like what you heard here today, leave us a rating and a review on all the major podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, Google. You know where to find us by now. And if you don't, drop us a line. We'll try to rectify that issue for you. For Mr. Mike Bachman and everybody here at Front Stretch, I am Davey Siegel. We will catch you next week. One last rodeo for this compadre right here. Catch you on the flip side. Enjoy the All-Star race. Don't bet $1 million, but if you do, do it responsibly.